when one sees that products are impermanent, one sees that they are produced in dependence on causes and conditions. Specifically, one sees that suffering can be stopped in dependence on stopping its causes, and that happiness can be produced through generating its causes. Therefore, through this, one finds the courage that one can get rid of suffering, that suffering is removable, and that happiness can be attained. Then through the investigation of the second wheel, that is to the second seal, that is to say that all contaminated phenomena are miserable, one comes to develop a wish to overcome not just temporary sufferings, but the very root of suffering. Here the term contaminated phenomena refers to phenomena, the process of production of which is involved with the afflictive emotions. There are many different interpretations of the meaning of the uncontaminated and the contaminated in terms of the context. When one investigates the root of suffering, this is seen to be the conception of self, and And thus, through investigating this seal, the third seal, that all phenomena are selfless, one can determine that the root of cyclic existence is a mistaken consciousness, and that mistake can be removed. And if one can pacify the conception of true existence that causes cyclic existence, then one gains understanding with respect to the fourth seal, that nirvana is peace. Thereby understanding that nirvana is the object of attainment. Through the establishment and mindfulness of these four, of bodies, feelings, mind, and phenomena, one's mind turns away from the emphasis on the appearances of this lifetime and on the emphasis of the appearances of the future lifetimes. One generates a consciousness which is directed toward liberation from cyclic existence entirely. Now, if you ask what is the reason for meditating on these as true sufferings,
Mm-hmm.
As Aryadeva says, what person who has not become discouraged with respect to cyclic existence could generate an attitude aspiring toward liberation from it? So, thus, cyclic existence does have a nature of suffering, right? And one doesn't want suffering, right? Thus, it is important in the beginning to recognize what is suffering as suffering and develop a turning away from it and a direction, what do you say, a direction toward nirvana.
When through this one develops
an attitude seeking for liberation. When through reflecting on the faults of suffering, one generates a wish for liberation from that suffering, from the depths of one's heart. One has and develops a wish to attain the enlightenment of one's own particular vehicle. Then one, at that point, one has attained the beginning of the path of accumulation of that particular vehicle, be it hearer, sata, realizer, or bodhisattva.
So,
That's the explanation of the four establishments in mindfulness. The next are the four thorough abandonings, which have the nature of ethics. To generate virtues already, to increase virtues already generated, to generate virtues not yet generated, to abandon non-virtues that have already been generated, and to not to generate non-virtues that have not yet been generated. Then the third are the four legs of manifestation. Because in dependence upon the manifestation or emanations from meditative stabilization, one can go to pure lands and so forth. These causes that bring it about are called the legs of manifestation. Now the path of preparation, path of accumulation, is divided into three levels: great, lesser, middling, and greater. When one generates the wish to get out of cyclic existence in the manner I just described, then one achieves the lesser path of accumulation. Now one needs meditative stabilization in order to proceed further. One can't attain either the middling or greater path of accumulation or the path of preparation without meditative stabilization. So that's the reason why these four legs of manifestation are set forth. So thus, with regard to this, if I explain roughly the mode of achieving a calm abiding of the mind,
当然就是你们估计 meditation 下这个了，但 meditation 我倒是信的。
So many people are talking about engaging in meditation, so we'll talk a little bit about meditation. In general, with regard to meditation, there are two types, stabilizing meditation and analytical meditation.
但明显了，啊，藏动的心念的藏动在。
These are called the cultivation of calm abiding and the cultivation of special insight.
嗯，啊，但，嗯，对这个西汉尼布的，哎呢，泰国其中的原点、极点的极点的代表，他们这个咋玩的？
The cultivation of special in of calm abiding and special insight are the root of all of the high qualities within the world and beyond the world.
嗯，那这呢，嗯，我那希腊的我卡的是呢。
So then, what are the entities or the nature of calm abiding and special insight?
嗯，心内我光着嘞，他光着个空着的，讲到嗯，生命过了自己都耐的哒，生命过了自己都耐呗，耐些到底，啊，他经过的时候，自己都耐呗，耐些到出来，那你理性现象给掉啊，那理性现象给他掉啊，见你，你等不差什么？
Taking as the source the unraveling of the Thought Sutra, when through the power of the development of the stability of the mind staying on its object, one is able in a constant way to induce the bliss of physical and mental pliancy, then at that point one has attained a calm abiding of the mind.
但那些就脱不硬了，但那些脱不就越来越下去，但那些脱不就越来越胖呢？哎，你，嗯，没办法呀，自己都减肥，减到一定程度，心脏就掉啊，脱什么？那很多下不来。And
special insight is a case when, in addition to having calm abiding, one through the power of analysis itself is able to induce a special form of the bliss of mental and physical pliancy, that is special insight. In order to induce a special form of the bliss of mental and physical pliancy has been induced by analysis itself, it is necessary first to achieve calm abiding, in which the bliss of mental and physical pliancy is induced by stabilizing meditation. Therefore, Shantideva says in engaging in Bodhisattva deeds that one who has the steadiness of calm abiding is to engage in the analysis, in the development of the analytical special insight. Even though the entity of calm abiding is stabilizing meditation and the entity of special insight is analytical meditation, whatever is either stabilizing meditation or analytical meditation is not necessarily either calm abiding or special insight.
当然是心内呢，进一步的自己的明白，可不可以开发圆满的？当中，加上，当然是心内，东西了明白，心内要的，马达我这个明白，有几层的开发了，写圆满的。现在印度心内，东西了明白，心内要的，啊，当然是，其他。 자자 진입을 미비 신내 요아리 대신도 한동야 진입을 미비 한동다 시다월 미비 한동 니가 요아리
Calm abiding and special insight of the mind are explained in terms of the motivation, the mode of meditation, not in terms of the object of the meditation. Therefore, the object of a mind of calm abiding could be emptiness, or any of the phenomena among the varieties of phenomena. And similarly, the object of special insight doesn't have to be emptiness. It can be an object among the many varieties of phenomena.
Minalia, but a lowish Tawachuna, Marmish Kuyaris, Marmit Savage Kuyaris, tell you a long Mirwash Kuyaris, so. But that's fit in the Shinchen. Sheva, the Namdog Mirwachita. That Namdog Solve, Shingu Mirwachita. Mirwe, never you devachita. Nasa you devachita, Titone, and Yulia Jewish Kuyaris, that division.
Then, what is the reason why calm abiding and special insight need to go together? As already explained, One needs to have the steadiness. It is in terms of having the steadiness of mind, or in addition to having the steadiness of mind, that one can develop the special potency of the power of analysis. For instance, if one wants to look at something in the dark, one needs to have a lamp, but that lamp has to be steady. The lamp has to be both bright and steady. Similarly also, this is an ancient example, it's not current with all these marvelous lights. One needs to have a consciousness that dwells or abides, what do you say, within abiding on the object, one needs to analyze it. But in highest yoga tantra, there's an explanation that one can achieve calm abiding and special insight simultaneously. And in highest yoga tantra, it's also explained that special insight can be achieved not by engaging in analytical meditation, but through stabilizing meditation.
So this
meets back to what I was talking about earlier, knowing how to press these channels, how to choke yourself and so forth.
You see, this involves, you see, if you properly, if you're lucky, very successful, then that's what it is. Simultaneously, that is, shilanyi budi nyamdo dhotya, din jokum khonetan dhota.
If you're able to do that, it's possible to develop calm abiding and special insight simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. And within, you see, few months.
Now, to turn to the actual practice of calm abiding.
First topic is that of the prerequisites.
Mm. Now here you see your ethic practice, ethical practice must be there. Also, you see, you need complete isolated place, complete silence, is a complete, I'd say, as a tranquility. It's highly necessary.
It's said that the thorn of concentration is sound, therefore you need a place that's naturally quiet.
Mm.
So thus you need a place that's not under the path of airplanes. And no sign, sound of flowing water.
Then you see, from your own sight, you must be contented. And all, you see, how to say, the worldly business must stop during, you see, that period. And also, you see, now here, your diet, right? Diet, samurai.
Mm-hmm.
Food. Diet also, there is some relation. You should not take too much, over diet, right?
Too much food.
Too much food. Overeating, overweight. Not good. So, you see, yeah. Anyway, I mean, you see, if we eat too much, then our mind becomes dull. And also, you see, sometimes, even you see this, skasure, dadan.
Even though you're sitting very straight.
No, mata. Dadan shashine, in kalekhan, but do stay where toa.
Then even your posture, the straight posture, will become very difficult.
So, therefore, you see, less eating. And also, you see, no question about sort of drink, drunk, alcohol, these things. And you see, sleep time must be kasore.
The amount of sleep must be proper.
Now you see, under, you see, with these conditions, then the way to sitting also is very important. That kangpo toji kirung slavare.
Should sit in the cross-legged posture.
But I think that can also kasha kangpo timme na in kawar bata. Mikbal mashmiche whole concentration dikang dhulu kangpo na.
But this can be very difficult for some people because then all of your concentration will go down on the pain that's in your legs.
So that those could have to have in the minute.
So then it'll probably be all right to sit in a chair.
Start lapa to stay over.
Putting the hands like so.
The left hand lower, right hand above. Start taking it to
and putting the two thumbs together. And putting them four finger widths below the navel. And if you sit in the cross-legged posture, your rear should be slightly higher and your back straight like an arrow. The two shoulders should be set naturally. And you should put your arms out a little bit because if you stick them to the sides of your body,
warm feeling.
It'll make too much warmth here.
So you see, like this. Then, godi,
then bend the head down just a little. Put the tip of the tongue up to the palate of the mouth. It keeps the breath from traveling much in the in and out of the mouth and keeps one from becoming thirsty.
Thirsty, yes.
And you should leave your teeth and lips as usual. If you have no teeth, you can put your lips like
that. Yeah, yeah. Me, another person.
And then let your eyes descend over the point of your nose.
Yeah, yeah, that.
And if you have a small nose, it can cause pain to your
eyes. Really? But since you have quite a big nose, so no worry. So I mean, you see, look down this. Sometimes it's a pain, you get pain, you see, yeah. So in that case, not necessarily to look, what call this?
It's not necessary to look at the point of the nose.
So you see, put such in the
you can look farther down.
이네 믹줌이 아들라 아 토마 마콤베도 믹줌네 다 팽그리
When you're not used to it, it seems to be helpful to close your eyes.
But you see, real meditation, concentration come with sixth mind, not by eye consciousness. So you see, in once you really set, once you get used, the eye not much, disturbance, not much important. Whether you, because not necessarily to close eyes.
I mean, it helps to close or not
to close. Go to the close chair.
It seems to help at the beginning to close the eyes.
You see, some differences with glass, you see. Make sure you know, shiva sawa yungi. Nasha togo yungi. Make sure you have to, nasha taga yore. Toss me sawa yore.
And there can be the difference that if you wear glasses and take them off, that you will have more stability but less clarity. And if you put them on, you'll have more clarity but less stability. Because there's a great connection between the mental consciousness and the eye consciousness. And if you face the wall, it's helpful. This is done in Zen. This is truly helpful. So that's the posture. Tomorrow I'll be talking about the objects of meditation.
His Holiness now begins Thursday morning.
If desire and hatred cannot be experienced together, how do you explain the love-hate relationships we witness between two people who are very close to each other? So what I was speaking about was simultaneously, right in one second, the impossibility of having the mode of apprehension of love and the mode of apprehension of hate at that very same moment. But it's our general experience that people often, fight together with each other, make love, fight, make love, make fight, and so forth. Is it useful or advisable to be brought under hypnosis into one's former lifetime and intermediate state in order to understand better one's actual life? I think it depends on the particular situation of that particular person. For some people it could help in that they would remember virtuous activities in former lifetimes and thereby be drawn into more such virtuous activities in this lifetime. But then there could be cases of people who would remember some awful event in the past and not be able to face it, and this caused them great anxiety. What are the spiritual responsibilities of parents to their children?
It's very important. See, children, what do you say? On the future, how to say it, the child's the future very much related with the early period when they remain with parents. So you see, education learned from various schools like so on, like that. But see, you know, the education alone, say, how to say it? I'm not very sure. You see, education is just like an instrument. Now, say, the being or the person who using education or that instrument is the, whether you call soul or self, the person. So the development in healthy way, the person itself, I think, very much depend on the family influence, family atmosphere. So in this respect, whether you see, this is someone believer or non-believer, it is his parents' responsibility to have a good human being. A good human being, right? But when it comes to me, yellow chicken, sanguja, that. Sure, kids came out, but miss sanguja.
I'm not talking about religion, but just helping the person to become, what do you say, good and wholesome.
All of that.
Since a hearer does not set out to realize the emptiness of inherent existence,
but
since a hearer, enter.
Oh.
Does not set out to realize the emptiness of inherent existence, but rather is attempting to realize a coarser emptiness, how can it be the case that hearers actually become foe destroyers, arhats?
You need
to make a difference between the proponents of hearer systems of tenets and actual fully qualified hearers.
You
need to make a difference also between proponents of Mahayana tenets and actual fully qualified Mahayanas. There could be a person who is by tenet a Vaibhashika, and by practice, by terms of their thought, a person of the great vehicle, a Bodhisattva. And there could be a person who is Prasangika by view, but is a hearer by thought. Whatever the case, in actual terms, whoever has reached the level of a superior is necessarily a prasangika. But it's not necessarily the case that any Buddhist must be a prasangika.
No.
It's not the case that whoever is a Buddhist is necessarily a proponent of Buddhist tenets. And thus there could be cases that somebody would know the prasangika tenets, but not be a prasangika. Yes, by tenet. A proponent of the prasangika system of tenets. In order for someone to be a proponent of a particular system, that person must study those systems and study that system or become trained in it and be able to present it by way of reasoning. To be a proponent of tenets, it seems that you must have a facility with what? Words? You must be able to say many things.
So, because she's done my share, check, the cooksome boot check, and cause you turn down what dots in Karal Tajana. Jidanji then to the Maratanian and Jumarva.
And so, even if somebody knew the essential meaning and was staying off by himself or herself, that person in general would not be called a proponent of that system.
That's finished.
Western religions use the term God, Buddhism does not. Could emptiness or nirvana be considered God? If the afflictive obstruction of the conception of inherent existence is eliminated, does one realize that everything is God?
God interpreted as a ultimate reality or truth, then the selflessness may consider as a God, may take as a creator, and creator in the sense that within that nature, emptiness nature, the things appear and disappear. So emptiness is as a basis. Because there is emptiness, the things can change, things can appear and disappear. So the shunya, or the voidness, emptiness, selflessness, is the sort of the basis. So, the digit catch around that. Tamani said, Tamam Tabasada, Kuzo Tabasadi, Lot Tamangawangi, Church, Lot Tamangawangi, and Denzi Yavazinia, Kazoleve, Denzi Yavazinia, Chu Kuzo Tabashado, Timolia Kuzo Tabashado, Denzi Meramolia, Tanda Tabashado, the Demare.
With respect to the doctrine of the truth. Of the two truths, conventional truths and ultimate truths, some people mistakenly say that one object itself, when one has ignorance, is a conventional truth, and when one doesn't have ignorance, when one is passed beyond ignorance, that same object is an ultimate truth. This is not the case, however.
In the word samvrti satya,
translated as conventional truth, the word samvrti can mean worldly conventions, it can mean worldly expressions, and it can also mean that which conceals reality, ignorance. However, Chandrakirti, in his supplement to Nagarjuna's treatise on the Middle Way, says that in this context, samvrti means a concealer of reality, ignorance. In other words, these objects are truths for that type of ignorant consciousness that conceals reality.
That's what I'm saying. Tenzin several punch, Tenzin sound a punk sympathetic Molia, Kajota. Tenzin several punch of a diggy, any temper joshi, the temper, temper, Kajota. Now the Kunz of Temper Sayago, Kunz of Tenzin, the Yamarba, but the song in the Tay Molia, Kunz of Samins, Kunz of Temper Mines, the Sherry.
Thus, Chandrakirti says that hearers and solitary realizers who have reached the end of their particular path as foe destroyers, as foe destroyers, these being persons who have completely abandoned the conception of inherent existence, as well as bodhisattvas on the eighth ground and above, who also have abandoned the conception of inherent existence, since these beings do not have that ignorance or that misconception with respect to which these phenomena are posited as truths, he says that for them these are mere conventionalities.
Now the kunzo temba, kunzo temba shibe temba the thala temba na bache longo temba che.
Thus, the word truth in the term conventional truth does not mean truth in general, but means truth for a particular type of mind. Because these conventional objects are truths, can be truths only for in an obscured, ignorant consciousness. Therefore, it is said that that they are true for this consciousness that misconceives of inherent existence. So then, is it the case that these conventional phenomena only exist for an ignorant consciousness? No, that is not the case. Since these conventional phenomena are validly established, since they actually do exist, that which certifies their existence or posits their existence can't be an ignorant, mistaken consciousness, but must be a conventional, valid cognizer. Therefore, it must make a distinction between that ignorant consciousness with respect to which these conventional phenomena are posited as truths and the conventional valid cognizer which actually certifies their existence. With respect to ultimate truth, the word for ultimate is parama artha, ultimate object, and there are different ways of interpreting that. In other words, that emptiness both is an object and is the ultimate, and therefore is the ultimate object truth, or that emptiness is the object of the highest or ultimate wisdom, or that emptiness is a truth which is a truth for the highest object, that is to say the highest consciousness.
Yeah.
Could you say something about the treatment of the loss of self in mental illness?
That the mental illness that condition
There are many levels of mental illness, and as I was saying earlier about depression, there must be cases in which temporarily there is nothing that can be done.